Blog Talk Radio.
Desert. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and I have a very, very special guest in the chat room today that I want to just say a few kind words to. She is my good friend from the Red Fox Radio Network, Kel Fritzy. Thank you so much for joining me today, Kelly, and I want to tell everyone in our audience this morning what I owe to my good friend, Kel. She is the reason I do what I do today. Over 2 years ago, I had an interview with Kel on my book, The Rose of Nowruz, and she encouraged me to do this. And at first, I was a little reluctant, but I thank God for people like Kel Fritzy, who's not only an incredible radio host of so many different programs on Blog Talk, but a great motivator and a great friend. And Kelly, I love you, and thank you so much for your motivation, because what I do today, I give all the credit to you, and thank you again, Kelly. And welcome, everyone, into the chat room today. We have an incredible program today. I am looking forward to talking with Annie Cyrus, who is the producer-editor of the popular YouTube series, The Glazov Gang, and also her own series called The Unknown, which chronicles her life when she lived in Iran. Now, the Glazov Gang is a very conservative, strong program on the YouTube circuit, which exposes this the liberal left media's challenges to conservatism. And they also do a fair and honest critique of Islamic influence from the radicals here in the United States. But beyond that, my guest Annie Cyrus is also producing a series called The Unknown, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later. She is Iranian. She's lived here for maybe 13 years or so. She escaped an abusive marriage and an oppressive life in Iran, so you want to stay tuned for that interview. She'll be up in about 25 minutes. But speaking of people that have escaped, got an incredible story right now from an Iraqi nun who lived to tell her escape from ISIS in the Middle East. This is back in May, but this Iraqi nun chronicles her life in Iraq during the time when ISIS was just coming in and killing, murdering, raping everyone, especially the Assyrian Christians and the Yazidis. But right now we're going to hear her incredible story on the cross in the desert. Let's listen.
And now a Dominican sister and others in her convent in Iraq escape ISIS terrorists who are trying to kill them. Now, she got away and over 60,000 others forced to flee in a matter of hours. Any Christian who stayed behind, ISIS would murder. This week, Sister Diana traveling to Washington, D.C. to tell Congress her story. And now she tells her herself right here on the record. Sister Diana, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me here.
Welcome to the United States.
Thank you.
How bad is it there?
I would say the situation of people, it's really not that great, especially after they lost everything. They lost their homes. They lost their dignity, because when you lose your home, you lose everything you have. You lose your dignity because you become homeless. And that's how we identify ourselves now. We have, even we are living some in containers and unfinished buildings, yet I would say we don't have any dignity left there, because we lost everything. Even our holy places that we used to worship has been some bombed, as you watched in the news and we watched a couple weeks ago. And I would say the situation not that good.
What happens when ISIS comes into the area? Tell me what happens. All of a sudden, you hear them coming, and tell me what happens. What do they say to the people?
Actually, for us, we left before. We were so lucky that we left before they got in.
That's but your convent. Your convent left.
Most of the people that we left, but those who were held hostages and some that they were released, they said, they mentioned some of the stuff that why had we left, we should have stayed. And we should only pay al jizya, a tribute to them, or convert to Islam. It was that easy.
What about, we're hearing here that if you don't convert, or if you don't pay the penalty and you don't leave, you get killed.
That's true. That's true.
Children?
Children, women, as you see. One of the stories that I have been struggling with is about 4 weeks ago, a woman was released by ISIS, thrown in the street. She is totally traumatized now. She is in her 40s. We're trying to help her, yet it's very hard because she was constantly raped, burnt by cigarettes, and tortured. That she was all her body was really beaten very badly. So that's one of the victims of the ISIS.
What do they come into town and say, are you Christian? I mean, how do they do that?
We didn't witness that. We were able to flee before they got into the town. But those who could not flee because they were asleep at night, so they were the hostages. And there are some pictures that of the hostages that they were released later in 2 months.
Why did you come to the United States?
I came to be the voice for those who have no voice, because my people told me that be our voice. We need the world to hear our stories, that we have been driven out of our homes. We have done nothing. Why do we deserve this while we are the minorities, that we have not hurt anybody? Do we deserve to be like this, living in the slums?
You left your convent, you moved to one location, but then ISIS showed up at that location, you moved again, right?
We moved, first of all, it was in Mosul, because the situation in Mosul, by the time the terrorism was very strong. So our convent was bombed a couple of times, not only one time. So we had to leave Mosul because it was becoming unbearable for the sisters living there. Later on, in 2014, on August 6th, that was the hour of danger, when we realized ISIS is really going to overrun Karakosh and most of the town. So
I heard testimony yesterday, when your testimony, I guess it was on Wednesday, one woman was saying how ISIS showed up and said she had to leave and she wanted to get her daughter, and they wouldn't let her get her daughter.
That was one of the hostages that was left there for 2 months. By the time the woman was released with her husband, she has her daughter in her lap. Her name was Christina, and they grabbed her daughter from her lap, and they said to her, you go, and she begged them to take the daughter, but she said, this is going to be my hours.
And what happened?
We don't have any news about little Christina, who was 3 years old.
It's just incredible. I mean, you put a real face on this, because, we're so many miles away from this, and Americans, you live and breathe this, and we hear about it, differently.
We live it. We live every minute that's I mean, it's not about just that we left, but the terror that we left. We live every day that we don't know what's our future. It's very hard to know that you don't have future anymore because everything is gone. And besides that, we don't know if even if someday we'll go home, will be safe for us or not. As minorities, we have this fear now.
Sister Diana, thank you very much for joining us. And I hope that, you know, I hope things will somehow get better. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just a nightmare, Sister Diana chronicling the life, what reality is life in, what reality is like in Iraq. I want you to know, we have Iraqi refugees sitting in prison, in jail, begging to become part of our country, to have the security and freedom that they don't have there. They're sitting in jail, being denied refugee status, and yet the Obama administration is making clearance for over 200,000 Syrian refugees. Most of them probably are hidden with ISIS, who will come in and infiltrate our system and set up sleeper cells in our country. And yet Iraqi Christians are being denied refugee status here in the United States. Horrible, unthinkable, after you hear this agonizing story from this Iraqi nun who is saying to us, please be our voice, please help us. And this administration has turned a deaf ear and a blind eye to the Assyrian Christians. Well, there's much more to learn. We've heard this in the news over and over again, but we need to hear it again and again. What ISIS does to young little girls makes them sex slaves, but there are those that are very fortunate to survive, and here are their stories right now on the cross in the desert.
It is now well known that there is no mercy among the terrorists of ISIS. Often the men in areas they overrun are viciously murdered, but the women suffer a fate that may be worse than death, sold into slavery, sometimes many times over, to suffer unimaginable brutality. Tonight, two victims who escaped their monstrous captors share their story with us. The report from our chief foreign correspondent, Richard Engel, in northern Iraq.
The suffering of the Yazidi people. Indelible images of men, women, and children reaching up for help. Food, water, blankets, dropped on the Sinjar Mountain by helicopters, many of them American. But help didn't reach everyone. In the refugee camps of northern Iraq, we met survivors of the horror that went on in the village of Kuchu. Its people, seen here in better times, couldn't reach the mountain. So they were still in the village when ISIS arrived. When they took the men, we didn't know how many were going to be killed, says 19-year-old Farida, who didn't want her face to be shown. In fact, ISIS killed almost all of the men. But they had other plans for the women. They were grabbed by the hundreds and sold off to ISIS fighters as the spoils of war. ISIS is reviving the barbaric tradition of the slave trade, proudly showing its fighters in this ISIS video discussing the Yazidi women they're about to buy. We showed Farida the video. She instantly recognized the men. I saw that one and this guy, she said. I don't know their names, but I saw them. She saw them laughingly inspecting more than 80 Yazidi girls, picking out the ones they wanted. All of the girls were screaming and crying because they didn't want to go with them, she says. So they beat the girls and dragged them away by force. Farida was raped repeatedly for 3 months. They sold me from one man to the next, she says. The ordeal was even harder for the younger ones. They raped girls who were 9, 10 years old, or even 8, she says. They would say the older ones know something about men, while the younger ones know nothing. Hawaida is one of those innocents that the ISIS fighters sought out. She's just 12. She didn't know what rape meant, only that she woke up bleeding. He was old, she says, about the man who bought her. He was 50. Somehow, Hawaida escaped, but she's so badly traumatized that only now, 3 months later, is she able, haltingly, to even speak again. She and Farida are being coaxed back by this remarkable woman, Kiman Rashid, from a charity called Wadi. The girls call her mom. Their real mothers are still being held by ISIS. Farida had never seen the video of the ISIS men. I see this, she says, and I think of all the girls they still have, because they are doing everything imaginable to them. We just want justice.
And Richard Engel joins us now from northern Iraq. This story, Richard, leaves one almost shaking with anger. You've seen so much in war zones. How did you process coming face to face with this particular atrocity?
Well, frankly, Lester, there's a word we don't use a lot in the news media, but it fits here. This is evil. It was absolute evil by design. This was not a war crime that happened by accident. This is ISIS policy. Now, luckily, these two girls amazingly managed to escape. They both walked away while their captors weren't looking. They had to walk for hours knocking on doors until they found people who are willing to bring them to a safe place. Now they are in a safe place here in northern Iraq, and they're getting help.
All right, Richard, I know they are getting help. You've written a lot more about this. It's on our website, but thank you for being with us tonight.
These girls will never be the same emotionally. And can you imagine and fathom a 9-year-old girl being violated, tortured, and raped by these savages? Tell you some good news in the midst of this darkness and horror. The Iraqi Christian Relief Fund reaches out to women just like this, young girls who have been violated, to Christians in Iraq who have no home, no food, no shelter. And a guest on my program back in June was Juliana Tamarazzi. She is the director, the founder of the Iraqi Christian Relief Fund. She was also part of the groundbreaking documentary film Honor Diaries. But please, go to Iraqi Christian Relief Council. It's on Facebook. It's also on YouTube. And donate to this worthwhile cause. They will reach out to the Assyrians and to young girls like this. They will connect them with the right help to give them hope in a life that has been torn apart by the savages of ISIS. Well, as we're sitting here thinking of these horror stories this morning, I also have a story I want to play for you. It's from a young Hindu woman named Yurvashi. Yurvashi is a Christian, and she suffered so much for her testimony, but Jesus gave her hope in the midst of her darkness and tragedy. You see, because living in the Middle East, we know nothing of what the cost is to following Christ there. But right now, I want you to hear the story of Yurvashi. She's a Hindu woman, and she recalls what life was like for her in her village when they found out that she was a Christian. We're going to hear her story right now on the cross in the desert.
I'm Urvashi, and I'm from Delhi. My childhood was not a very happy childhood. My father never liked me laughing, and my father never liked me playing with other children. I accepted Christ as my personal savior in the first year of my college. My father got behind my life, and it was the everyday thing that he used to give money to my elder brother to go and have a drink, and he was badly drunk, and they both will come and beat me like anything. Every day in the morning I used to go with marks on my face, hands everywhere, and everybody used to make fun of me. When he saw that we are not these beatings are not helping anymore, that we are not ready to leave the house and not going anywhere, then they did the worst thing with me. Every day they will hit me very badly. They will collect all the people from the surroundings, and then my father would tell them that I am a prostitute. And I do prostitution. Just because I believed in Christ. So he was trying to find out some ways to insult me, just to throw me out from the family. Nobody used to believe him, but still it was very painful for me and for my brother. He was very helpless like me, but then we both did not lose any courage. We just went on and on. But one day, my father and my elder brother continued beating me for several hours. and took me to the nearest police station at 12 o'clock midnight, and they just left me there in a very bad condition, and they told all the police staff and members that this girl is a prostitute. You can keep this girl here forever and do whatever you want to do with this girl. I was shaken. My heart was broken completely. Because that was the cost I was paying for only for Christ in my life. But yes, as I said, God had a plan. He never left me alone. My brother came running behind me. He was crying for help. He told all the police members that my sister is not a prostitute. And she has not done anything wrong. She's a teacher in a school. No one believed us, actually. That was the only point where I thought that why am I paying such a big cost for Christ? And then at one point my brother decided that I should get married so that I can have one place where I can stay forever and we don't have to go and hunt for different places to stay and survive. And of course I'll have a husband who can take care of me. But then again the question was that I didn't want to go against the Bible, and I didn't know any Christian boy actually. But then my brother had a friend, my younger brother had a friend who knew everything about me and my brother. I just went ahead and got married to him. And then on the very first day, I shared the gospel with him and he said yes for that. And we started going to the church. And then slowly my husband shared the gospel with my younger brother. And he accepted Christ as his personal savior. Then at one point, my husband also shared the gospel with my father. And my father also accepted Christ, and now he is a believer. And I'm really happy for this miracle, because I never even thought that this can happen in my life. My father can become a Christian, a true believer, though he gave me a very tough time for being a Christian, for believing in Christ. I just paid a very high price. Of course, it can never be higher than my Christ, the price what he paid to save my life. And I really believe that he had a great plan for my life, and even today Christ is there to guide me at every single step I take. Though I don't have everything very big today in life, but of course I have a very good husband, a very good son, and a very good brother who is a believer, a father who is a believer. God is saving my family through me.
Wow, what an amazing testimony from Rivashi, a Hindu woman. The only answer her father had to her newfound faith was, "My daughter is a prostitute." And he had her arrested. This is the only way that he could answer the amazing change in her life, was to disgrace and to discredit her. I was thinking when I heard this testimony of the perfect story in the Gospels of a similar situation to a woman. And it's the story in Luke chapter 7. And I want to read this to you. And as you hear this story, and think of Rivashi's story as well. Luke chapter 7, one of the Pharisees asked Jesus to have dinner with him, but Jesus went to his home and sat down to eat. When a certain immoral woman from that city heard he was eating there, she brought a beautiful alabaster jar filled with expensive perfume. Then she knelt behind him at his feet, weeping. Her tears fell on his feet, and she wiped them off with her hair. Then she kept kissing his feet and putting perfume on them. When the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, if this man were a prophet, he would know what kind of woman is touching him. She's a sinner. Then Jesus answered his thoughts. Simon, he said to the Pharisee, I have something to say to you. Go ahead, teacher. And Simon replied. Then Jesus told him this story. A man loaned money to two people, 500 pieces of silver to one and 50 pieces to the other. But neither of them could repay him. So he kindly forgave them both, canceling their debts. Simon, who do you suppose loved him more after that? Simon answered, well, I suppose the one for whom he canceled the larger debt. That's right, Jesus said. Then he turned to the woman and said to Simon, look at this woman kneeling here. When I entered your home, you didn't offer me water to wash the dust from my feet, but she has washed them with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You didn't greet me with a kiss, but from the time I first came in, she has not stopped kissing my feet. You neglected the courtesy of olive oil to anoint my head, but she has anointed my feet with rare perfume. I tell you, her sins, and they are many, have been forgiven, so she has shown me love. But a person who is forgiven little shows only little love. Then Jesus said to the woman, your sins are forgiven. The men at the table said among themselves, who is this man that he goes around forgiving sins? And Jesus said to the woman, your faith has saved you. Go in peace. There is so much here that I don't have time to expound, but I want you to hear what Simon said. He is a lot like the religious people of the world. When they see this prostitute, they have nothing but condemnation, like your Vashi was treated. And Jesus knew their thoughts. And Jesus taught this little story, this parable, to say, though her sins are many, she has been forgiven. This woman displayed perfect worship, bowing, kneeling at the feet of Christ. Why? Isn't he just a prophet? Oh, no. Jesus knew her thoughts. Only God knows the thoughts in the heart of every human being. And even those seated at the table said, who is this man that he forgives sin? Well, no man can forgive sin, no priest, but God forgives sin. And so they are sitting face to face with God manifested in the flesh, and they have missed it. They are so filled with religious pride that when they see someone tormented by sin, especially this woman, they categorize her as some prostitute, some immoral person. And if he was truly a prophet, he would know this. Yet Jesus came to save the lost. Jesus came to forgive and give compassion to the hurting, to the broken. The biggest lesson for Simon in this story is to look at his heart and to see the depth of his sin. But he doesn't see sin in his heart. He's a Pharisee. He's a teacher of the law. How could there be anything wrong with me? And Jesus says, I will show compassion on this woman. I will forgive her. But Simon, wretched hypocrisy in your heart, do you see the self-righteousness in your heart? As soon as Jesus entered, this woman bowed in adoration and worship, and she was forgiven, not because of any good work that she had done, but because Jesus is full of mercy and full of love and full of compassion. And those blinded by religion can't see that. They are filled with self-righteousness. There are many, many so-called Christians today, like Simon, who don't go out in the street and preach the gospel and reach out to the immoral and the lost because they somehow feel like they're worse sinners than I am. Jesus came to seek and to save the lost. And we need to have the heart of Jesus today for the broken, for the hurting, for women like this who know they're living in darkness and shame. But they know where to find the love and the forgiveness. They know where to go. And most times, it's not to the church, because the church is too steeped in religion. This is a shame. When we hear what's happening to the Christians in the Middle East, to those that are hurting, our heart needs to be genuinely open to them, to receive them. And it's such a tragedy when our own government is locking the door to Iraqi Christians and opening it to potential members of ISIS through the Syrian refugee migrants. Where is our eyes at? We are blind. We are hurting. As a nation, we have forsaken our God when we don't open the doors to the hurting and the lost in Iraq. Right now, I have the privilege of having a very special guest today on The Cross in the Desert. Her name is Annie Cyrus from the Glasov Gang. Welcome, Annie, to The Cross in the Desert.
Thank you so much. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing fine. I want to talk from the very beginning, Annie, about your role with the Glasov Gang. It's a very popular conservative program on YouTube, and you're the producer and editor of the Glasov Gang, Jamie Glasov, but you're also doing a special series called The Unknown, which chronicles your life when you lived in Iran. So tell us about the Glasov Gang. Why should people watch it? Tell us about your role in that production.
Well, of course. As you mentioned, I am the producer and the editor of the show. And the main reason I decided to get involved with the show was because until I met Jamie, I couldn't hear about everything he talks about anywhere else. He basically dares to talk about all the evil we're facing today, and he doesn't just talk about it. He brings all the facts that we need to hear in order to make a better decision, and he also offers a lot of solution to our problems.
Yes, we have the liberal left media, and that does more to cloud the issue, to distort the truth, and to preach a more folly. And the news is filled with so much of that today, where they don't face the real issues, from the email, a controversy with Hillary, and to all of the things that are happening in the news. And so you found someone that speaks the truth. But now you also have a program which I'm really interested in as well, and it's called The Unknown, where you actually unveil your life testimony of what life was like in Iran. Tell us about The Unknown and why you got involved with producing that.
Of course. Thank you. The Unknown was a decision I made. Also, Jamie helped me a lot on making the decision. And the reason I decided to do so was, sadly, as you said, we don't hear a lot, or I would say we don't even hear anything about what's happening in countries like Iran as an Islamic country. And a lot of my fellow Iranians, they either don't have the opportunity or they're not in the best country to have the freedom to come out and talk about it, or they don't have access to, you know, equipment or studios or all those stuff that's needed to make an episode like The Unknown. So I decided to come out and start the show. After doing the first episode, I realized I actually need to continue doing it, because the response I got was, as you said, the number I thought was way lower. A lot of people had no idea what is happening in my country. They had no idea what women are going through over there. And I blame it, again, all on our media, because nobody covers the stories.
Mm-hmm.
So I just, you know, kept going. And I will keep going. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say I just did. I will keep going, because there's a mm-hmm. lot to tell, not just my story. Thankfully, a lot of my fellow Iranians decided to send me letters and tell me their stories, so I could come in front of camera mm-hmm. and tell their stories as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Annie, I'm sitting here thinking about what you're doing. It's incredible. The program I do exists for the same reason. And when you heard about this nuclear deal, I'm sure that it unsettled your heart, and you were frustrated that our government would sit down with a terrorist government and allow them the freedom to sign an agreement and oppress the Iranian people so much more. And as you pointed out, we've heard all about the nuclear situation, but no one has heard about the human rights atrocities going on in Iran. So that is what I believe The Unknown is all about, to unveil what's happening in Iran, because the media won't talk about human rights. They're so absorbed with the nuclear thing, they won't talk about the hurting women in Iran.
Well, I would say I wasn't frustrated. I was so angry for 2 days I locked myself in my room, to be honest with you. Mm. Because it wasn't just about the deal. It was the fact that our president, so-called, literally intentionally planned this whole thing. And the media helped him manipulating people's minds so easily that just pissed me off.
Yes.
And the fact that no one, I had so many of my my fellow Iranians from Iran trying to reach out and say, we are against this deal. There were so many problems over there, and nobody heard their voice. No one here heard their Iranian voice in Iran saying no to the deal. And a lot of it, actually, I saw a video on YouTube twisting the truth, saying, oh, Iranian people are saying no deal because they hate Americans. And I went in there and started putting comments saying, no, you're translating this Farsi to a wrong English. They're not hating Americans. They're saying no deal because it gets worse for them when there's more power in the Iranian government. But, well, nobody listened, sadly. And they, you know, they just went through with it. And they're getting bigger and bigger. But, yes, it did frustrate me. It did make me really angry. But, again, going back to no media talking about it or getting the Iranian people's voice out. And, as you know, there are so many filters. It takes one Iranian ages to get a message out of Iran. It's almost impossible.
You know,
and nobody cared.
Mm-hmm.
And by nobody,
I'm
I mean our government.
Yes, I'm hearing your anger, and I agree with you 100% on this. What a deception this has been pulled on the American people. And the thing that frustrates me and angers me is that there are children in the street in Iran that live in cardboard boxes and are dying. There are political prisoners tortured every day in Iran without any medical care. There are 2,000 plus now that have been hung by the Iranian killing machine, and all of this money from this deal will flow into the pockets of mullahs and go out to the terrorists in the world. It will finance terrorism, but none of this money, Annie, is going to help your people recover from the true suffering that they're enduring.
Oh, absolutely. I posted a video 2 days ago on my page, Randy, that the leader, Khamenei, right after the negotiation goes through and, you know, all the celebration is going on, he comes on the Friday prayer and he announces, saying that we will continue helping our friends in Syria government and we will help our oppressed Palestinian people with the money. He says it. I put it on Facebook. It's out there. People could go listen. And, yeah, it's in Farsi, and I translated myself. I put a, you know, subtitle on it. How much power should you give a leader like him that everybody knows what an evil he is? You're giving him enough money, and he stands there publicly telling Iranian people, this money will go to Palestine, and it's going to go to Syria. And you're still sitting here in front of the camera telling me, this won't solve all problem with Iran, but it will solve the new nuclear problem with Iran. Who are you kidding? We're not a bunch of kids.
Uh-uh.
I'm sorry if I'm yelling. Or
No. I want you to speak your mind. I want you to say what's on your heart. In fact, when I talked to you prior to our interview, I said to you, Annie, can you tell me why our government would sit down and even consider this? And you gave me the classic answer. You said, what is Obama's middle name?
Exactly.
Now, I want us to focus in on a little bit about your life and what you have suffered for and what you've endured, your life in Iran. I talk about on my page when I was explaining to my listeners what your story was about the idea of being in a forced, abused marriage in Iran. And again, the media certainly doesn't tell the story of women. The liberal media is all for women's rights, but they never talk about the oppressed people in the Middle East. So this is why I want you on the program today. I want you to be a voice for the women in Iran and share your incredible story of what life was like for you as a young girl in Iran.
of course. I always offer this if you need a short answer or if you need a long answer. But if I was about to make a very short answer on that, I would say there was no such a thing as life. I don't call that living life.
Mm-hmm.
But if for lack of better term, we have to call it living life, and I want to mention this, that I had it the easiest. There are so many other girls that had it worse than me. If you think what you heard of my stories are bad, there are some girls and women back in Iran that are having worse than what I had. So I need to say that because I really need people to know that mine wasn't the worst case scenario of a woman in Iran. It wasn't. However, back to my story is, well, simply because I was not counted as a full person and I was just a half, basically I had no rights, because in order to have a right, you have to be a human. You have to be counted as a person. So not having any rights, I either needed my father or my husband or some man from my father's side to decide everything mm-hmm. for my life, from going mm-hmm. to school, to getting married, to not getting married, mm-hmm. to get a divorce, to buy a car, to work, anything. I mean it. Anything outside of my bedroom, when breathing in my bedroom, was up to me. Other than that, was mm-hmm. not up to me. And now if
wow.
they decided, which in my case they did, if they decided to marry me off or marry any girl off, that's the end of your story. You have no way out of it. You will sign the paper and you will mm-hmm. leave life with that person, as abusive as it gets, as hell mm-hmm. as it is, or you end up killing yourself, as a very a mutual friend of one of my dearest friend, you know, just fires herself up. She put herself on fire wow. and killed herself. And trust
yes.
me, it takes a hell of a lot for an 18-year-old girl to kill herself in such a horrible way.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned half a person. Let's clarify that for our listeners. The Quran says that the testimony of a woman, and this is practiced in Iran, is only worth half that of a man. A man is superior to a woman, according to Surah chapter 4. The testimony of a woman is only half that of a man. When it comes to inheritance rights, she gets less than the man. When it comes to marriage or divorce, the man is in control. She cannot divorce. So you're setting the stage to explain to us that living in Iran, the constitution of Iran, is ruled by the teaching of the Quran.
Of course. Of course. It's okay, as far as half, one little very quick correction is that the testimony of a woman does count as a half. However, in some cases, a testimony of a woman doesn't count at all.
Mm.
For example, adultery. As I mentioned on my last episode on The Unknown, is that if it's a case of adultery and 200 million women can come and testify that a man committed adultery, and they're not going to be taken as a testimony. Unless one
right.
man is in there. For a case like adultery, like murder, these two cases, a woman's testimony won't even count as half unless it's backed up by a man. That's a very important point to be heard, because they don't even get that half a person right in some cases. But on other cases, yes, there's testimonies in a half. But if you read the Constitution of Islamic Republic of Iran, the very first sentence on it says, this country is ruled based on ruling of Quran.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's written on that paper that this is what it is. And anyone who is about to disrespect or disobey Islamic laws and rules will be punished by death. No doubt about it. You don't get away with that. In any shape or form, you are not obeying or you're not respecting the Islamic rule coming from Quran, you're punished by death. It is on the constitution of that country.
This is what my listeners need to understand. The the way women are treated in Iran. You don't hear this on the media. You don't hear this much at all, but this is the way women are treated in an oppressed society. One of the things that comes to mind when you talk about women, of course, I spend a lot of time on my program talking about a case in point. Rahana Jabari was a young 19-year-old girl who was lured to an apartment under the pretense of redecorating this apartment, and the man tried to rape her. She did what any woman would do, Annie, and she stabbed him in self-defense. To find out this man was a former intelligence agent. And so a woman who is raped in Iran is not protected. Rahana was put on trial, sentenced to death in the last October, hung. This is the way women are treated in Iran when they are raped. Your thoughts on that?
Actually, I'm glad you mentioned that. My episode, The New Unknown, that's coming out tonight, is actually me talking about rape in Iran.
Wow.
And as I mentioned on that, let's put it this way. There is no such a thing called rape in Iran. It just doesn't exist. Reason for that are two ways. A rape can happen in here, United States. Even a wife can go and file a complaint for rape against her husband. The woman has the right to say yes or no. In Iran, if that's the case, well, as by law, a woman is a property of a man, so you don't get to say no. There's no such a thing as rape, right there. As cases like Rehane, if you're raped by a stranger, it's not his fault, it's your fault, because woman is the one who seduces the man. The reason for female genital mutilation is because it's the belief of Islam that a woman is always the one seducing a man. So in order to avoid bringing shame to family, we just do the FMG. Right?
Mm.
Excuse me, FGM.
Mm.
So there is no such a thing as, you know, sometimes it's like, okay, we know there is something called rape, but sorry, we're not going to protect you against it. It's worse because there is no such a thing as rape. You can go over the entire laws, rules, anything of Iran, and you will not see a little verse, little sentence of punishment for rape, because rape doesn't exist by the law.
This is unthinkable. When me, as a Western person, Annie, system thinks about a woman, how she's violated and tortured and treated, and you think about justice for a woman, in Iran there is no such thing as justice for a woman. Tell us a little bit about your situation. According to your testimony, you were married at the age, I think, 13. It was a very abusive marriage. In fact, your husband at one point actually took you in the basement and held you hostage in the basement.
Well, excuse me. Pretty much, if we talk about it, yes, that's the case. But by law, again, I'm a property, so I'm never a hostage. Because law says if my husband doesn't authorize me to leave the house, then I can't leave the house. If I do so, then I'm in trouble.
Oh.
So, yes, I would say abusive would be just too easy on this situation. The reason is when your husband owns you to the point where he can beat you and he doesn't need a reason to beat you, all he needs to say is, she didn't listen to me. And the matter could be, I wanted, you know, a tea and she didn't give it to me. That's good enough for the court in Iran to make you guilty and you deserve to be beaten. Again, on that episode of me trying to get to court for a divorce, that's what the judge said. Like, you have to have a witness saying you were beaten for no good reason, meaning if there was a good reason, then no complaints. Get out of my courtroom. So when the man has that right, pretty much it's beyond abusive. You get beat up, you get raped over and over and over and over and over again because, well, I just explained, I don't want to repeat myself. He decide if you continue going to school or not. He decide if how much money you get. He decide how much you eat. He decides everything, as I said, not just your husband, your father also. If you come from a very religious family, this really brave person sent me a letter yesterday, fellow Iranian lady, and told me how at age 14 she was arrested sent to jail for not wearing a proper, hijab. And after she was released, her father beat the heck out of her and locked her up in the room because she brought shame to him.
Wow.
For being convicted of not wearing a proper hijab. 14. And she was also sexually molested while in prison. I'm sorry if I jumped from my story to someone else. I'm just trying to tell you that there are so many ways. Like, man just can do literally anything. For God's sake, my husband can behead me, can kill me. And all he needs is four of his friends come to court and say, well, she was cheating on him. And guess what? Mm. He's walking away. Simple as that. No evidence is needed. Four men, they could be your relative, they could be your buddy, they could be your friend, they could be strangers. Four men come and say, well, this man killed the wife because she was cheating. And you are good to go. You did God's work. Go home. God bless you.
Well, if a woman...
The story is...
I'm just sitting here thinking, the man can do no wrong. Annie, if a woman is beaten, she is blamed because she's surely done something to deserve it. If a woman is betrayed by her husband, she must be blamed because she cannot satisfy her husband. So if her husband unfairly accuses her of having a relationship with other men, it's her fault because she doesn't wear or behave properly. It's always the woman's fault. It's never the man's.
Absolutely. Well, here it is. As a woman, you're a slave.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always your fault. It's always
now,
your fault.
You had a crisis point in this. You certainly were emotionally and physically just abused beyond reality. And you got to a point where you needed to escape. Tell our listeners about how you escaped this hellhole.
Oh, my. Well, I was pretty much smuggled out of country. Because going back to the fact that I don't have a right, I couldn't get a passport because my husband wouldn't sign off on it. In order to get a passport, if you're not married, you need your husband's your father's signature. If you're married, you need your husband's signature. So I was smuggled out as far as physically goes. If you're asking mentally, I pretty much just got everything I had left together and I thought, here are my two choices. I either escape. And if I'm caught, they kill me. If I'm not, I'll make it and have a life. If I stay, either he kills me or I kill me. Either way, my choice is to stay and die or run and live life. So I decided to do so. I smuggled out, got to Turkey, went to UN and, became a refugee.
Now, that is a very difficult life. There are many of my Iranian friends, Annie, that spend years in Turkey waiting for refugee status. And it's a very long, it's a very expensive, it's a very difficult situation. Most Iranians find their way to Turkey to escape the horrors of Iran. One of the things in your testimony that was so beautiful is when you stepped on American soil, someone said something about you didn't have to wear the hijab anymore. And it was one of the most... happiest moments of your life. Tell us a little bit about that story.
Well, when I got to U.S., obviously, even when you're in Turkey, it's still an Islamic country, specifically where the refugees are. Most of the refugees are living in a very Islamic town. That's where we are. So your mentality is still, where it is. As far as a woman, you're nothing. You got to wear the hijab. You have to behave this way, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So when I got to U.S., my immigration officer walked toward me. The first thing happened was he tried to grab my hand, and automatically a panic came. It's a public place.
Mm-hmm.
And today when I think about it, it actually makes me laugh. Of how much I could be, I don't want to call it brainwashed. It wasn't brainwashed. It was just like how terrified you could be to steal things and somebody could get you in trouble. But anyways, also when I was informed that I don't need to wear the hijab, I don't need to answer a lot of questions. I pretty much, when my freedom was announced to me at the airport, I pretty much, I felt that life. I was proud. And I, in a way, I wasn't scared anymore. I wasn't scared what's going to happen. I was, it's hard. I'm 18 when I got here. You just need to figure out how to live life now. But I wasn't scared for my life anymore, I guess is the answer.
And it's like having it was like having an emotional meltdown. You're here and you know now that you are free, that you have freedom, that you will be respected, that you will be treated as an equal, that although we have problems here, lots of struggles, there is true freedom. You don't have to wear that scarf anymore. You can be who you want to be. This is the land of the home of the brave, where you can realize your dreams.
Exactly. But it takes a while for it to sink in. Because, at the end of the day, when you're isolated back, again, I go back to the fact that Iran is very isolated for people. And we're not talking about today, where people can use a lot of, ways to get on Facebook and stuff like that. Back then, none of that happened, none of that existed. So very isolated, not knowing what is the, real world out there. And all you hear growing up is, how Americans are so evil and they always lie to you and this and that. So it took me a while to trust it and to believe it. But even at that moment, just thinking it could have been a possibility was just an amazing feeling. And now today, knowing it's the truth, it's just why I walk. A lot of people ask me a lot of times, like, where are you from? And I say, I was born in Iran. But now I am a proud American citizen. And
that,
I can't emphasize on the proud.
Yeah, yes. What is so amazing about you, Annie, and many Iranians, is that you are free. You're living in a free country, but you are using your freedom to be a voice for the voiceless in Iran. You haven't forgotten your family, your friends in Iran. And to me, this is the most beautiful part of your testimony, that you are here, you're on the media, you're on social media, and you are speaking up for them that don't have a voice.
Absolutely. I appreciate that. But the only reason I do it is, I remember the days I would sit down and, as a child, I would cry and just think, why is nobody coming to help? I just remember those days, and I know there are millions like me over there just asking, why is nobody coming to help? And if I can make one of them, even one of those girls, if I can give them better life, if I can give them more security, then it's all worth it.
Yeah. Well, with your work in the Glazov gang and in the unknown, what is the future? What is it you want to try to accomplish? What are the goals in your producing this series? How do you want to reach out to your Iranian friends that are suffering just like you once suffered?
Well, if I was about to break down the goal, as I always say, we always need to start from small to big. The very first hope that I have is for people to wake up. Forgive me, as I always use this, I need them to get educated, because it's very important to know our enemies. The reason a lot of women are suffering back in Iran, or even any other Islamic country like Pakistan, Afghanistan, any of those countries, is because we are not educated enough here. I need to get everyone to stop trusting our media. I need them to listen to what we have to say, because it's based on fact and not fiction. Because here's what I told few people question me of, how do we trust you? And I'm like, you don't, but if you need a reason, here. I have nothing to gain but a lot to lose by doing what I'm doing, because we all know I will be a target sooner or later. But I'm not going to gain anything out of this. I'm already a free woman, an American citizen, living beautiful life here. So you should think about it and ask yourself, what she's saying won't gain her anything but bad attention from enemies. But what our media is saying is gaining them millions and millions and millions. So judge for yourself and see who you're going to trust. And if you decide to trust us, listen daily, because there is a lot to learn. And when we are educated, that's when as people, we can help our fellow humans. Every woman, every child in Iran can have one person here on their behalf to speak up.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you 100%. Now, you know the thing that it angers me the most, Annie, is the liberal media, the women, always talk about, here's the real war on women. Here's the real war on us. These conservative Republicans are oppressing us. They're trying to keep us from our reproductive rights. This is the real war on women. Well, Annie, that is the biggest lie on the planet. Because what you lived in Iran is the real war on women. And you never hear the liberal women ever speaking up for oppressed women in the Middle East, do you?
Oh, I was actually hoping you're going to bring this up. Somebody asked me that since you started speaking up, did any of the feminist groups approach you? Well, the answer is no. No one has contacted me saying, hey, girl, what can I do? Hey, is there anything you want me to say on my broadcast? This and that, this and that. No. I see on news that there is an investigation going on because we don't have enough female directors in Hollywood. And that's a real war. Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's not war. Just wait. Wait until the day that Obama's going to make this country Islamic country. And then I will tell you what's a real war on women. A real war on woman, as you said, is when a girl, a 9-year-old girl, by law, can be raped legally. That's a real war on woman.
Yes, yes.
There is such a thing as a legal marriage age in Iran. For your audience, if you don't know, listen to me. I am telling you this because I read it. I've seen it. There is no legal age. You can have a girl at birth, and you can promise her to someone. But until she turns 9, that person cannot just sleep with them. This is as ugly as humanity can get.
You are educating us, Annie, on the ugliness, the oppression of women in Iran, and I cannot tell you how thankful I am for you. You have a large audience following you on the Glassov Gang and on The Unknown, and I'm following you too, and I urge our listeners right now two things. Please support the Glassov Gang. You have links you can put on my page where people can actually support you. Please follow Annie on The Unknown because we need this kind of education. We need her to be a voice for the voiceless, Annie. So any final thoughts today that you want to share with our listeners?
I do. I normally don't like to repeat myself, but please take 10, 15 minutes of your day. Listen what is happening to our people in Middle East, more specifically in Iran, because that is the most extremist Islamic country as it is. And ask questions. Try to ask from people like me who believe that when you're educated enough, please start talking, get out there peacefully and inform people. Let the rest of the planet know what is happening to our child and woman back in Iran because they all deserve a free life as we have here. Please do that.
Okay. Exactly. Annie, how can people connect to you on The Unknown? What should they do?
My Facebook is my full name, Aynaz Annie Cyrus. They can find me on Facebook. The Unknown is on our YouTube channel, which is The Glazov Gang. Glazov spells G-L-A-Z-O-V, The Glazov Gang. All our episodes are there, and I always ask everyone to feel free to send me questions. I will answer any question you have. I will make videos. I will send you emails, answer every question you have. And just in case for those of you who don't know how to spell my first name, it's A-Y-N-A-Z. Aina Osiris. You can find me on Facebook. My page is completely public to everyone.
Fantastic. I cannot tell you what a delight you have been, how you've opened the eyes of so many of us, and you've told the truth, and how you have really laid out the facts of what life is like in Iran. I want to thank you so much. You're always welcome as a guest on my program, and thank you, and God bless you, Annie, for being on the cross in the desert today.
Absolutely, my pleasure. And if you give me one very quick second,
sure.
I just want to say I was able to see everybody's comment. Forgive me, and I wasn't able to reply. So I hope I don't mispronounce the name. Thank you so much, Kendra. I appreciate all the kind words. And Red Fox, which I'm guessing is Kel, thank you so much.
Yes.
And yeah, that one, I think I said it right.
Yeah.
So, and thank you so much, Randy, for giving me the time. I really appreciate it, and I do appreciate everything you're doing for us.
It's my pleasure. You're always welcome, and thank you so much. God bless you, Annie. Come back again and keep us informed, and please, everyone, tune in to the Glasov Gang and the Unknown and be educated. Annie has a heart for the Iranian people. She has such a passion. She reminds me a lot of myself because I'm an American. I'm not Iranian, but I see the passion in her soul and in her eyes when she's on these programs, and she really, really wants to reach out to Iranians, and I just am such a blessed person today to have her as a guest. Thank you, Annie, for being on the cross in the desert. I want to take us now to a new segment in the program. We're going to be entertained by the good, solid worship music of Cutlass on the soundcheck. Let's listen. I want to welcome you to the Sound Check, where we feature prominent Christian recording artists that have incredible talents and powerful worship music, and today is no exception. These are the boys from Portland, Oregon, and they have a very soft worship edge and a very hard rock edge. They are very talented musicians, and they can play different genres of music so well, and they are very, very popular among the youth. And I want you to hear the music of Cutlass. So no more of my talk. Let's feature Cutlass today on the Sound Check. This is called We Fall Down.
At the feet of Jesus.
some awesome worship music from the band Cutlass. They have that ability to rock out and also have that worship edge to their music, which is what I find them to be a very unique band. And I want you to hear this very special song next. It talks about our faith and how our faith, our in God, can so shape our future and shape our life, especially when we're going through the most extreme and darkest of circumstances. And I want to dedicate this song to all of the Christians that live in Iran and have to meet secretly in the house church because they can be put to death if they have converted from Islam to Christianity. And they have a real living faith. These are the Christians that know what it means to follow Jesus more than we will ever know, because they live in situations every day where their life is on the line. And they can be put to death, but they're not afraid. They have found the hope of their life. They have found the peace of their life. They have found true peace, hope, and forgiveness in Christ. And so their faith is very rock solid. I want you to hear this song that describes that right now by Cutlass. Here's a song called What Faith Can Do.
Everybody falls sometimes. Gotta find the strength.
the music of Cutlass, What Faith Can Do, they are incredibly musicians. Their music has such purpose and truth. The lyrics are so well crafted. As I was listening to Annie's testimony this morning, I was amazed by the story my good friend Paymanay, who is an Iranian Christian refugee living in Malaysia. I asked her to write about this on the program, and as I was looking over Paymanay's story and compared it to what Annie said, it is absolutely right on. It is exactly what Annie is saying, just so that you understand, Annie lived it. Paymanay lived it. They know what they're talking about. What I want to do right now is read once again what Paymanay has to say about what happens in Iran. And this is her story today. I'm going to read it like I always do, word for word. On the topic of marriage in Iran, what a woman lives. As she gets married, to make her decision according to the law, there have been thousands of girls who have been forced to marry whom their father selected for them. Although today it happens less frequently in Iran and usually happens in uneducated families, still girls at the age of 9 are married by their parents' decisions while they don't know anything about marriage. Their imagination of marriage is only a pretty bride in a beautiful white cloth. Yes, for law, nothing changes, but the girl's authority. But in the girl's view, everything changes, because typically fathers are nicer than husbands. Only a few fathers forbid their daughters of going abroad. Only a few fathers forbid their daughters visiting their relatives. Only a few fathers forbid their daughters visiting their relatives. Only a few people beat their daughters. If the daughters want to leave their fathers, the law cannot stop them, but a wife does not have the rights to get divorced. Even in the few cases that she has rights, she has to pay a lot, and it will take years and years to succeed to formally divorce. If the woman is beaten, she is blamed because she has surely done something wrong to deserve being beaten. If the woman is betrayed by her husband, she must be blamed because she cannot satisfy her husband. If her husband unfairly accuses her of having a relationship with other men, it's her fault because she doesn't wear and behave properly. If her husband is in relationship with other women, it's his wife's fault because she cannot make her husband happy, or worse, she has made him angry. If the man has other wives, the woman must still be thankful because the husband still gives her spending money for children. Moreover, the husband has not done anything wrong. He has just used his rights to have other wives, according to the Quran. Yes, many things change for worse for a girl. Poor the girls whose fathers are as terrible as their husbands, and their husbands are as fierce as their fathers. Still, many girls marry to escape the strict rule in their parents' house, and usually they go from bad to worse. Husbands are more likely to misuse their unfair rights submitted to them by the unfair law in Iran. What good do you expect to happen to a girl whose father has the right to kill her without being traced by the law? What good do you expect to happen to a woman whose husband has rights to murder her if he proves she betrayed him, but she cannot do anything if she observes her husband 1,000 times betraying her? What good do you expect to happen to an educated woman who is worth half a baby boy? What good do you expect for women whose addict fathers or husbands force them to submit their bodies to other men to earn money for the father or husband's drug problem? Do you expect to happen to a woman in Iran if her father and husband decide to take advantage of and misuse the law? What good do you expect to happen to a woman in Afghanistan, Pakistan, and some Arab and Muslim countries? Women are counted nothing but a tool to serve men's society. Wow, Paymanay, I think you and Annie must have somehow gotten together because you both are echoing the same horrible, oppressive life of women in Iran. You write so well, Paymanay. There is hope for women. There is real hope for abused women, for broken women, for suffering women. You will find that many women in Iran, in Pakistan, in Afghanistan have found a hope when they study the life of Jesus and when they peer into the Gospels and find out the way that Jesus showed compassion and respect to women. Most Middle Eastern women have converted to Christianity, number one, because they see in Jesus a compassion and a love and a healing for their brokenness. They find in Christ a hope that they have never had before. And I'm not just trying to push a religious system on anyway. I'm inviting women to have a love relationship with God through Christ. I have found many Muslim women whose lives have been broken. You can see their interviews all over YouTube. Their lives have been shattered through misuse, abuse, and shame. And they find when they come to Jesus a healing and a forgiveness that they never knew existed. And so when I read the stories, the broken stories of like Annie and like Peymeneh and many other Iranian women, I think of the hope that is found in Jesus and how Jesus comes into our hearts and forgives all of our guilt and shame. I want you to hear that God is our strong tower and our help. And this is the last song I want to play on the program today. It's from Cutlass on the Soundcheck.
Yeah.
the powerful worship music of Cutlass on the Strong Tower song from their worship CD on the sound check portion of my program today. It's just been incredible. I want to thank Annie Cyrus from The Unknown. You can watch it on YouTube from the Glassoff Gang. You can also watch that on YouTube. Please go to her Facebook page as well and on Twitter. It has been an incredible day listening to what life is like for women in Iran. Annie is a living testimony. She has found freedom, and now she is a voice for those voices in Iran. I want to thank Kendra. I want to thank Sharin. I want to thank Kelly. Yay, Kelly. I want to thank Debbie and all of those today in the chat room. You've really made my show very, very special. I want to say God bless you and have a great weekend. I will see you Monday again on the Cross in the Desert. We're going to close out with Striper.